This is a Collider.com audio interview.
This is like an Austin Powers plot. Now that I have you all in one room, I'm going to seal the doors. And keep everything a secret.
It's kind of ironic you're shooting in Howard Hughes' old plant.
I know. Yeah, that wasn't lost on me. We figured we'd get some of the good spirit from the Hughes legacy here. Gather around. Gather around. Yeah, come on, get close. I don't care.
Don't be afraid.
Come on. Oh, now it's like the press junket. It's like
the Blues Brothers.
It changed for me. Yeah, exactly. The Blues Brothers.
So there was an announcement on your blog yesterday that Iron Man is going to be PG-13.
I put it up. A lot of times people say I make announcements. I'll jump on the Iron Man movie group, and if I see people talking about something or they have a question or they're speculating, I'll clarify as best I could with pertinent information. But it wasn't like I don't really make announcements like that. Like, here's the big announcement. The movie's going to be PG-13. You don't know. But that's what we're all shooting for. So when people were speculating, I think when Fantastic Four 2 was given a PG and people were surprised by that, they were wondering what we'd be. I thought we were going to be PG-13.
And what was the reason for that?
Because you want it to be entertaining for everybody. You want it to be appropriate for kids, but not geared towards kids. And I think PG-13 is sort of that good balance where you could have violence, you could have real life or death stakes. But yet, it's something that I'd be comfortable bringing a younger than 13-year-old kid to. But, it's tough. These type of movies, you want it to be good for the whole audience, for everybody. And if you skew too young, you sometimes disappoint adults. And if you make it too dark and too violent or too much explicit language or sexuality to it, there's a lot of kids out there that want to see this thing. I have a 6-year-old who's like dying to see the movie. I don't want anything in there that's going to make me, as a responsible parent, uncomfortable that he's going to be repeating something in school or seeing something that's going to freak him out too much. So,
what does that have to do with the alcoholism story at 11, the first one?
Honestly, I'm sort of trying to really be dictated by the story of the books, and so. He starts, the demon in a bottle happened, what was it, the 80s? It was much later, it started off in the 60s, so what you really grasp for, it seems, in success, if you're lucky enough to make more than one of these movies, is what happens to the character, how does it change so it doesn't just feel like a serialized hero that just goes through fights different bad guys. How does he progress through each story? The good part about an origin story is you have a whole Joseph Campbell journey that the guy goes through in becoming a hero. The problem is you have so much story to tell that it starts to get clogged up with too much stuff, and then you end up rushing through beats or villains or things. The problems with the second and third ones are, you got great villains, everybody knows who the guy is, but how is he different from the ending, the beginning to the end of the movie? And for me as a filmmaker and as a storyteller, I really look for that whole progression in character as the, what's the mythology of this movie? What's the myth that you're telling? And that's what makes it entertaining, I think.
What are the fights going to be like with that big iron suit? How does that change the way you film movie fights?
As far as what what the technology that you use, it's pretty, we have really all the options. We have ILM, and after seeing the last Pirates movie, I really feel quite comfortable that they could make it look good, And then you have the Stan Winston suit that you have that to help make it feel real and connect things, and I think you've got to do a little bit of a shell game with the audience of showing real one shot, fake another shot, and not let them know where one shot becomes real and digital till their left brain is so locked up worrying about it that their right brain can enjoy the movie. So
I guess I mean like the art of a movie fight, that just he knocks a guy into a wall because it's so big and heavy, or like fancy things you can do.
I think you always have to look for fancy things to do. I think you have to be innovative in the action. There's a lot of movies I saw and enjoyed where I couldn't follow the story or didn't give a damn about the story, but because the action was so innovative, it entertained me and I was excited by it. And honestly, these types of films, you're working on the action long before you're working on the dialogue. You're working with storyboard artists, with writers, with actors, producers, studios. Can we see if we could keep everybody quiet over there who's close by?
You've mentioned that Iron Man is a unique hero in a way because he's kind of a guy like Batman in a way, but who creates himself, creates his own superpowers. Can you talk about what the story's about for you and the character?
Well, the story for me is about a guy who's got, you know, I think everything, there's always, every movie, something's rotten in Denmark. You know, you got to sort of start off with something's out of balance in the world. In the case of, and I think in Marvel movies especially, you look at the personal life of the character in the microcosm, and then you sort of look at the macrocosm of the climate of the world. There's a supervillain doing something. There is a problem in the world that has to be fixed, otherwise life as we know it will not exist. But then also in the character's personal life, there is that sort of thing that happens too. And what's nice about Tony Stark is he's a guy that, you know, you sort of have all the flash and glamour of Tony Stark, billionaire, inventor, genius, and playboy, and then you get to play the fun of that, but then you also get to explore what that might leave to be desired. How is he flawed? How does he grow and change through his captivity? And when he comes back, how does he become Iron Man? What are those steps in that journey that gets us to the point where we understand who he is, what he stands for, and how he's changed?
Hey, John, can you tell us what this set is and what you shot you already?
This is his... this is the beginnings of his... This is his workshop and the beginnings of what will be the Hall of Armor. This is below his house. We built a house that sits on the bluffs overlooking the Pacific up in Malibu, Point Doom. And we have another set that we're shooting in today that's sort of what sits above this, sort of an architectural high-tech home. And this is his sub-basement. So out those windows, you would see the Pacific Ocean. That's a driveway up to outside of his house. He has all of his, just these awesome cars, everything from a 32 Ford Roadster all the way through a Tesla electric car. I mean, we have everything here lined up, a Celine supercar. He has, you know, great, great cars, a Shelby Cobra. And then over here, there's the remnants of what was a really well, you know, everything you could possibly need for fabrication, design. You could build anything in here. And this is, and then this area was more of a living area. And so this is sort of where he would seclude himself. And, you know, we sort of suggest that all the innovations and inventions that come out of Stark's mind usually start alone here as opposed to, you know, he's got his office at Stark Industries, but this is probably where most of his work happens at 4 in the morning.
Could we talk about Obadiah Stane, casting of Jeff Bridges?
Yeah.
He looks great. It's pretty cool. But do we see Ironmonger? You know, is he Ironmonger?
You're going to wear that shirt and ask me if we see Ironmonger? Or you're not getting enough information? Is that the problem? You need just a little more to go on?
Well, Jeff says that the relationship... You know, he still says that the relationship is of a mentor.
Yeah.
And obviously, we're still under embargo, so we're not going to be talking about this for a while. So.
Oh, you are? Here's the bottom line. We're making a Marvel movie, and it's the first time Marvel's making its own movie. And so I feel, and also as a filmmaker, I like to, you know, I have a certain... who's that? Flip and turn it. Ironmonger's... So I want to stay true to the books, but with these movies, everybody's watching for, you know, I've been working on this thing a year. It's going to be another year before it's out. And if everybody figures everything out along the way, it gets to be, by the time you see the movie, you feel like you saw the movie already. So we try to put enough twists and turns and things in there to keep you guys, have something that you guys don't know as we go forward. But by the same token, because it's Marvel, I want to stay as true to what the broad strokes of the comic books are. So You know, although you know, an audience, and if is he a mentor to Tony Stark? Yeah, that's sort of the relationship that we found between Jeff Bridges and Robert Downey. That would be good. Is it still Obadiah Stane? Yes, it is. Are there certain expectations people might have who've read the comic books for several decades based on who it is? Are they going to be waiting for another shoe to fall? I think they probably will. And I think that, you know, we're not going to change the universe so much that to the purists it will seem like we've betrayed the underlying truths of it. So, you know, if you've done your homework on the books, it's going to serve you well when you go into the movies, because we're doing it too.
Now, can you talk about the undertaking for you in terms of taking on all this action sequence, which is a little different for you?
It is, and we have a great second unit. There's a guy named Phil Nielsen who's directing second unit. Probably as we speak, if you hear something blow up, he's probably on the other set blowing things up. We've been very, very lucky to have a group of people that are very good at developing and calling the action. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and pretend that I have a huge action experience. I think I could tell a good story. I think cinematically I can make something compelling. Maddie Leibetic's a great director of photography. But what I'm bringing to the table is more the humanity of the story. In enforcing rules on the story as well, that where it doesn't feel like two completely different films. And there is the possibility that, you know, it goes from, you know, Swingers to Power Rangers, and everybody's like, what am I watching, you know? So the trick is to sort of bring up the human story to a world where it feels like it's a comic book, it fits into the genre, and then keeping the action aspect of it, I wouldn't say restrained, but hold it up to a certain standard of reality, that you have a broadness that you expect in a comic book movie, but it's not like just do whatever the hell you want because it's a movie and everybody just wants to eat popcorn. So I have a certain, I mean, I think in my body of work, I've held it to a certain standard, and now in making something that has to be appealing to a much larger audience than I've really hit before, I want to make sure that we're giving everybody what they want and making it fun and exciting, but also making it something that I could be proud of.
Can you talk about what Robert Downey Jr. brings to it? He's an unusual thing.
When we cast Robert, when he was approved and we got him to be in the movie and Marvel gave it its okay, it completely freed me, because I knew that I was halfway there to having a movie that I could be proud of. He's, you know, I can't think of anybody better than him. He brings a reality, a humor, a panache, a life of experience where he really feels like what he's bringing to the table. He could be, you know, there's a lot of Tony Stark in him, and that's so much better than trying to teach somebody to pretend that they are funny, or pretend they are smart, or pretend they are talented, or pretend that they've
personal issues.
Lived through, you know, lived with fame and lived with all of the, you know, challenges and benefits of it.
John, you yourself look a lot different than when we saw you last.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Has the job been that stressful?
It's been tricky. Let's put it this way: I want to lose some weight for a role.
Oh.
Yeah.
So for acting, not directing.
Yes, for life, and I'm 40 now. I just turned 40, and I just had a baby less than a year ago, and I did the math, and I'm like, I better take care of myself because I want to be around.
You look great.
Thank you very much.
Can you talk a little about the fans? Are you hearing from them? Are they giving you?
Yeah, the fans are great.
Do they like the picture when they saw the picture?
They've been great about everything. They really have. And I, you know, it's almost like you almost want something to be a little, you want them to have a problem with something early on and get it out of the way. Because these, you know, this is, look, fans for any movie is important. For this particular type of movie, that's the nucleus of your audience. And I don't know if the internet is something that could be seen as dictating the marketplace. I don't understand how that works yet. I know that as a filmmaker, I get the fans of this particular genre are very smart and know more in certain cases than the people that are working on the movie, as far as how much and specific their information is. So I like to go there and just get to the minutia of the detail in certain cases, because it's a great, it's like Wikipedia, you know, you, it's a collection of information from a lot of people that tends to bear out in a very cogent way. And, you know, there are certain people that are idiots, but they're not, they don't tend to be drawn to this material that much. They tend to give a damn, and most of the stuff I see is, thank you for caring so much about it. I've been waiting for this movie for 20 years. I've been waiting for 10 years since I heard they were going to first make this. This was my particular favorite superhero, and it's nice to see that it's getting this type of treatment and this type of cast. And because when they first hear it's made, they get excited. Then they hear who you're casting, they say, oh, this might actually be one of those types of superhero movies, not the other kind of superhero movie, you know.
In terms of tone and storytelling, what lessons did you sort of take from, if not just Marvel movies, but comic book movies in general?
Well, I think Nolan is just, you know, really, you know, reinvented the genre yet again. I mean, I really liked the first Batman movie. The Tim Burton one was very exciting. But the caliber of cast he was able to get, the level of storytelling and acting, and the sense of fun that was maintained in a character, you know, in a with a character that I thought was completely picked over by the time they did their last movie before that, but that they were able to sort of hit reset and come with that and make it fresh again, excited me, because it said that, you know, it just sort of for me said that there's, you know, the sky's the limit for who you could get and what, and a filmmaker with that background, it's nice that you have all these guys coming out of independent films who are finding a way, who don't resent big movies. It's not like the 70s where it's like the system's keeping us down. We're people who grew up loving movies, and the reason we're doing small movies is we don't know any better or have the resources, you know. And so as you see Peter Jackson, as you see Chris Nolan, as you see Bryan Singer, finding a way to bring integrity and a sense of fun to these big movies where you feel like you're watching a good movie, and it's not one that the director's doing apologetically. They're doing it because they love it and they're excited by it. And then I get to play with all the toys, build the suits, do the CG, build all these great sets. For me, that's what, you know, for me, that's what it's all about. And I think it's the sort of indie background where all you have is character. That's your car chase. Your car chase is a funny scene. Your car chase, your big explosion is two people having a conversation that's interesting. It sort of sharpens those tools so that by the time you have all these great storyboard artists and designers and, you know, CGI wizards coming in, you're not relying on that. You're not just hammocking between those set pieces. You're able to actually bring, you know, the same... I mean, we direct, when I'm here with Gwyneth and Robert, I mean, I would be working with them in the same way if I had written a spec script and was shooting it for $1 million. You bring that same sensibility to it, and hopefully, you know, I don't want to lie to you, like, I know, I hope it all comes together in a way where it feels like of one movie, but yet it's not insulting the smart people, and it's not inappropriate for me to bring my kids to as well.
Can you talk about the design of the suit?
The Iron Man suit? We had some artists that we had hired to work on it. Phil Saunders, Ryan Meiderding had worked on various suits that we have. They're people I had met on, Phil on Zathura, Ryan on, as I was developing John Carter of Mars. They're great artists, and they have a whole department overseen by Mike Riva, who's our production designer. And then I really gravitated to the Adi Granoff stuff. And Adi and I, and Adi had actually contacted me through MySpace, and because I had set up a group, actually even before the group, just when I put my thing up, he contacted me to be my friend. He says, I thought you might want to meet me. I'm the guy who designed all I did all the drawings that you have on your website. And I was like, oh, I'd love to talk to you. And then he was really excited to get involved. We hired him to do some drawings for us. We flew him out here. He met with Phil and Ryan and Mike and the Stan Winston crew, and we all sort of collaborated together in finding a suit that could be made practically to be worn so that it wasn't always, you know, a cartoon. And also when you have practical things, it tends to keep the CG a little more honest, because if you have to make a direct cut from a practical suit that you love how it looks to something virtual, you now have a litmus test. So,
what was important to retain about the comic book suit?
The suit, the more you could. I don't want to reinvent it. It's not like the glowing Superman fiber optic suit. I really am embracing what it is. And the best thing I heard was when we first got the Mark One out, which was, you know, which we took a little bit of leeway with, because in the books it really doesn't make sense that he would make that out of spare parts. So, but yet we wanted to keep the personality of it, and everybody was like, "Holy shit, that's so cool." And immediately we're like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen when they see the Mark III?" You know, because it. And what happened when we showed the Mark III was, this is great. It's just like I saw it in my head, and that's a very hard thing to achieve because everybody sees different shit in their head. So it was just like in the head, and then everybody was like, "Oh, but that's clearly a CG suit." And then all of a sudden, I think it was on your thing. I think they saw the suit guy moving around with the suit on. They're like, "Wait, that's not a fake. It's a real suit with a real guy." And you know, of course, it could do different stuff in CG than it can real. And then that becomes the difficulty, is where you don't want him being moving around like RoboCop, and he flies through the air and he looks like Spider-Man. So that's the balancing act we're playing. But we got great people.
What's been the most challenging scene to shoot so far, and basically
scene to shoot? The most challenging scene to shoot, well, we were in Edwards Air Force Base. That was, you know, we got the great C-17s and the Raptors and all the stuff that's in Rhodey. We made him an Air Force lieutenant colonel, took a little bit of a leap there. But in this, you know, it was, the logistics of that were very hard, because there's a lot of things you can't point a camera at there, and, you know, and there's a flight line, and they're testing, you know, the state-of-the-art experimental aircraft there. So, you know, all the stuff we are thinking, we got the best stuff. I mean, there are hangars there that you can't go near, and I'm sure have stuff that they're flying around now.
Anything about this filmmaking process so far that's surprising to you? Obviously, you've got a background.
I'm surprised I'm on schedule. That's the biggest surprise. Because I brag that I stay on schedule always, and I have on every movie I've been on, and I'm always on budget, always on time. And I thought, okay, this one, there's going to be curveballs and so much out of my control. So the fact that we're on schedule now and the scenes have borne out well. I'm surprised also by the amount of freedom I've gotten from Marvel. There's
How so are you surprised?
Because there are certain things that Marvel is very meticulous about, and there's a definite formula to the way action is done. And then when it comes to the scenes between the people, we have very, very good actors, and Marvel has been very involved. But they're a small crew. You know, you have Kevin Feige and you have Jeremy Latcham, who are sort of our executives on the project, and they're here because Hulk hasn't started yet. And so we could sit in the trailer with the Marvel guys, with the producers and with the actors, and talk about what the scene should be based on what we've shot and what we've learned. And there's a flexibility in material, you know, so in a lot of ways there's a lot of freedom to try things different ways, get what we know we need to get the story to work, and then bring a certain humor sometimes, or a humanity to it. So there's a real sense of freshness and discovery in this project.
Are you a little leery of this going in? Because you know it's Marvel and it's their first film, you know, on their own, essentially. Was there any concern about it?
I was ready for the challenge. I mean, I had done Zathura last. My last experiences were developing John Carter of Mars, which we did a bang-up job, beautiful artwork. These guys, Fergus and Ospie, did a great script for us. And everybody loved it, and they were just scared of that genre or the material or the fact that they had Star Trek coming out next year or what it was. They said, we don't. Then not only did they not greenlight it, they let the rights lapse, thinking that this was not a project that anybody would care to do. And then, of course, you know, you have Brad Bird and Pixar and Lasseter thankfully picking it up, and that thing's going to be huge. And if they're true to the source material as we were when we were developing it, they're going to have a phenomenal movie, you know, between Star Wars and 300 and all that. I mean, this is the type of story you need to find to use the technology that you have available today. Right across the road, they're doing Avatar over there. You know, they're doing a huge, huge movie in a room this size. That's the new way of doing it. So I think they missed a tremendous opportunity with that, but I'm glad it's going to be made. Now, And then the last experience before that was the Thorough, where we really worked hard. We got a movie that was well received, but was not really supported in a way where, you know, it was the best reviewed movie Sony had that year. And, you know, and didn't it, you know, and it, there wasn't even one billboard up. They didn't even print up posters. So it was very disappointing that, you know, we came at the end of a long string of flops over there at Sony between Stealth and Zorro and, you know, everything that they had. And by the time we had come out, they just were, you know, there wasn't really a game plan, I don't think, to release the film. And, you know, fortunately now it's out on video and people are seeing it and liking it. But I didn't want that to happen again. I didn't want to fall through the cracks. So when you work with Marvel, you know that there is a fan base of core fans that are going to pay attention to what you're doing. And if you're doing a good job, those fans will be very vocal, and word will spread. And right now, so many people try to virally create this sense of grassroots something on the internet, and they try to force it. And you can't force it. It has to come organically. And when you do a movie like this, you get to play with all the big toys, like I'm getting to do, and you have a fan base that is going to be very vocal, positive or negative. I mean, if you have Catwoman, they will put the pillow over the head of the movie and make sure it never sees the light of day. But if you do, but if you have a Dark Knight, or if you have, any of the myriad of quality movies that come out, the word will get out there and people will start to pay attention. I think reviewers aren't really paid that much attention to. I care about reviews. I like reviews. But if you look at the correlation between reviews and box office, it doesn't really correspond. And I think people are looking to the internet and to peers and to hear what the buzz is and see how the buzz is growing to see, you know, like Transformers is like building a tremendous buzz now. I think regardless of what reviews it gets, I think my kid wants to see the Transformers, and I'm going to see it with my kid. And,
John, yeah. Can you talk about the commercial pressure coming off of Seth Rogen? I mean, do you feel like while you're on set, like this one better be a hit?
Well, I mean, what's good is Elf, like, sort of carved a real path for me, and so Zathura. If Zathura had been a bad movie and not made money, then I would have something to worry about. I think that's why you always have to make a good movie. Because even if the movie doesn't perform, there are people who are lining up to work with you saying, they fucked up the marketing, but you made a good movie. If you could make me a good movie, I'll take care of my end of things. I don't know that it's ever been a director's job to create a marketing campaign. I mean, they do. You have a voice in it. But ultimately, I think they just include you enough to make you feel like part of the process so that you'll hit up the actors to do what they... to. You know, they can't get an actor to go to Comic-Con. I could turn to Robert and say, Comic-Con's fucking fun. It's going to blow your mind. Wait till you see how many people give a shit about this movie. Wait till you walk into that room and see. And they'll say, really? And they'll say, it's going to be fun. Let's have a blast. We'll go out to dinner. We'll have a good time. We'll walk the floor. Bring your kids. I've done it 2 years in a row, and it's my kids love it, and San Diego's great. And they'll go, you know, or to say, hey, let's do this one extra interview. Let's add another day to the press junket. Hey, let's fly to the premiere here together. You know, if the director says that and is excited about it, and buys into what's going on, you know, I think the actors are more likely to do it. I'm more likely to go out and do press for the movie, and that's the type of thing you can't buy with marketing money, you know. So, but I don't think that they really look to directors to lead the charge in ways other than participating. So, you know, so the success of something, certainly success has a lot of benefits. It could keep a career going. It can make somebody very rich, even if the quality isn't very good, if they're successful. So, it, you know, success is always good, but if it doesn't end up being commercially successful, it better be creatively successful. If you can't do either of those, you're not going to work for a long time.
Can you talk a little about the casting of Terrence Howard? He's such a serious actor, and they've not really thought...
Yeah, he's great. Terrence, honestly, was somebody that they were talking to. Avi was talking to him even before I had... been hired on. So by the time I had come in, he brought in Terrence and was you know, it's hard to argue with casting Terrence. I mean, he's, he could have been Tony Stark, you know, in a different, you know, if we had gone a different way, a little bit different than the books, I think he's got that those type of chops. And the idea that, you know, in success, where do you go with these movies? I think that's where they fall short. People don't think far enough in the future. They have a great movie, and then they say, how do we do it again? And that's the difference between a sequel and a chapter. And so in looking at chapters, where could we go? You could go War Machine with Terrence Howard, and we want to, you know. We could go a lot of different ways with this cast that we have.
Are you on board for three?
I would do, you know, if the experience is as good as this, for another one I would keep going. It's hard to say, because I'm sure Gore and Sam are, you know, I don't know how excited they would be to do four after what they've been through, you know, that journey of 10 years. But I would see working on this thing with, you know, I think it's fun and great, and hopefully it gets easier as it goes on, as you get it down.
Is there kind of talking about the quality of the actors that you have and these people that are very much in demand, how hard is it for you to get people back to do a 2 and 3, or are they already locked into that?
I think they, if their experience is good, which it has been so far, based on what everybody's told me, maybe they'll say something different to you guys, but I know that I've made it fun. I've made it something where hopefully the work is as good quality as they would on any movie, you know, so it doesn't feel like they're working on a movie that's one for them, you know, one for the man. They do one for themselves and one for their career. You know, hopefully they saw this as a big movie. I asked Robert, I said, what do you want to do in your career now? He says, I want to make movies that are good and that people are going to see. And it seems very simple, and it might not seem, but it's a pretty profound statement. Actors want to be in movies that are good, that they're proud of, but there's nothing more frustrating than making a great movie that, you know, is a featured title on Netflix that, you know, oh, I really wanted to see that one. Or, you know, you want to do a movie it's going to be part of your culture. It's going to be part of, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. You reference that everybody, it's like The Sopranos. Everybody knows what you're talking about, and you've seen it, you've impacted lives, you've created a cultural ripple. And that's something that you can't get always with an indie. Sometimes it happens, like Swingers, usually it doesn't.
How are you going to be dealing with, talking about the buzz that these films generate?
Yeah.
This one's only going to get higher and higher as we get closer to the release date. How do you respond to this almost disproportionate, obsessive reaction to film and comic book type?
I welcome it, because I'm right in there. It's not a scary, weird, looming presence. It is, you know, I go online, I look at stuff, and I see what people are saying, hell yeah, and what people are saying, what are you doing with this? And people are confused about this, and there's certain things they're confused about that I want them to be confused about, and there's certain things they're confused about I don't want to be confused about. I don't want to be confused about whether or not we hired somebody to score the film because they're reading on IMDb that something happened, or whether they think the rating is going to be something else, or whether the suit was designed by this guy or that guy. So I like to clarify, and then certain things where you want to, it's a game you could play with the audience. But I think if they know that you care and are paying attention, and there are choices that you're making because you're making them as a choice and not because you don't know what you're doing, they like it. So to me, buzz is great. I would have killed for people to care this much about the last movie I was on. You know, what you don't want is to just disappear, because you worked so hard. I mean, worked 2 years on this movie. I'm going to have gone from a pregnant wife to a walking baby in the time that it takes to make this movie. And that's a mind blower. And if it, you know, one bad weekend, you know, something happened, you know, you got everything on one dice roll. So I love to have the interaction. I love to know that they're out there. I love to know after working a 14-hour day and things feel bleak and did I get everything I need, you go online and you see people saying right on. And even if it's a little thing, it's a big deal, man. It's not easy doing this shit. I love it, but it's hard. It's hard.
Have you gotten advice from any other kind of action directors or giving you something?
I have more from like Kevin Feige, who's been around for all the X-Men movies, and now he's president of production here. He's really good at, like, this is what happens now, and this is what happens. Or I've been to the set at Spider-Man 3 visiting Sam Raimi and just seeing certain things go so slow because they have to. and certain things go really fast. But, you know, not getting freaked out by when you have 400 people sitting around waiting for one guy to hang a light. You know, it just is, from coming from independent films, the knowing how to pace it and do it, because, you know, being on budget, being on time, I figured out how to do it. But this movie's a, you know, I don't think I've ever been on sets like this. I mean, I was a small part in Batman Forever, but and I saw the Batcave and all that stuff. It was really cool. But Daredevil wasn't like of this scale. Nothing I've been on has been of this scale. So just to walk around it, it is, and not, you know, see a set like, what, turn to Peter Billings, like, what are we shooting there? What set is that? And like, oh, that's the airplane. You know, like, oh, that's right. But I don't even know what's going on. I take people walk around and show them around, but it feels like the first time I'm seeing it sometimes.
Cool. Okay, great, guys.
Thank you.
Are you going to be doing dinner for five?
We're done right now. I'd like to. Who knows?
Love that.
Maybe after that. Maybe after this, I'll want to do something really small like that.
Is Iron Man money?
Yes, he is. I hope. We'll the jury's still out. We'll find out.
Have you thought about already a running time on this?
Yeah, we got. I don't like long movies. It's got to be
like two,
realistic.
Over time. Two? Under
I don't
two?
Think over two. I don't know yet. I mean, the assembly will be, but you know they always are. So we'll knock it down. I want it to be a movie where you're left wanting more, as opposed to you know, feel like you're checking your watch and waiting to pee.
And I guess the last thing is, what are you showing at Comic-Con? Or what are you
well,
doing?
We're figuring it out now. We want to do something impressive. We'll figure out what we got. You know, we're definitely holding back a lot till then. So
okay, thanks, guys.